Welcome to Leading the Next Generation with Tim Elmore. I am your co-host, Andrew McPeak, and our mission here at Growing Leaders is to empower the emerging generations with skills to lead in real life. Tim, today we're talking about parenting.
Yes, we are.
You know a thing or two.
Well, yeah, I don't consider Growing Leaders a parenting organization, although we do many events for parents. Yeah. Schools will bring us in and say, we want you to talk to our parents as well as our faculty and students.
So. Yeah, and when we talk about leading the next generation, who's doing it more than parents right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So way back in 2001, I was asked to do a book by a publisher called Nurturing the Leader Within Your Child. And I said, well, you know, I'm not a parenting expert. I work for John Maxwell, blah, blah, blah. But they said, but you're the next gen guy. So it was a wonderful experience for me. But I was able to gather from research that I'd done on moms and dads, stories that I knew from the moms and dads in Atlanta that I was working alongside of, and then my own two kids were young at that point. So we're going to kind of drill down on that and hopefully have a great conversation that will be helpful and relevant to parents out there.
Yeah, but this started becoming obvious to us not because of watching parents, but because of watching the product of their parenting, which is the students that are entering colleges and universities.
Yeah, so you had a few encounters recently that you saw, you're not becoming what you could.
Well, it's actually going back to my very first job when I was leading young people. I had a whole slew of college interns that I was leading, and two young men came to mind as folks who desired leadership but just felt like they couldn't do it. One of them, a young man, Matthew, was so introverted that even though he was extremely intelligent, that introvertedness, that shyness actually kept him from feeling like I'm a great leader. And I remember him sitting down in my office and going, I feel like I should just quit because I don't have what it takes. And there was another young man named Joseph, and I remember he had amazing leadership potential. He would communicate in these small groups and be really great. He did not have an introversion problem, right?
Yeah.
The problem he had is time management. Because he would procrastinate, do his work really, really late, and then fall asleep and miss a meeting the very next morning.
Yeah.
I actually remember leaving a meeting one time because I knew exactly why he wasn't there. I walked all the way to his dorm room, went into his room, knocked on the door, and sure enough, he was dead asleep.
He was in
bed.
Because
that was the problem. Yeah. So both encounters were young people, young men in this case, who desired leadership, wanted to be leaders, but there were things that kept them. And so in the end, both of them said, I don't know if I'm ready for this.
Yeah. So more recently, I met with some university students, and I chose this group because they had all served in leadership positions in high school.
Yeah.
And I just assumed they would naturally continue in college.
They've been trained, they've been ready. Yeah.
Very good. What I found was quite the opposite. They got to college, and they got so completely overwhelmed, which happens freshman year. Not only did half of them not sign up at all, they said, I'm just trying to survive.
Yeah.
But the other half that had signed up quit.
Wow.
So not one of them was continuing in a leadership position. Now, that's not the end of the world. It's not a crime. But I was thinking to myself, why were they not realizing this potential I had seen in them, their junior and senior year of high school? Why was it stopping? What was the gap?
Yeah.
And as I began to interact with them, I began to learn some things that is a pattern. It's predictable, but it's a pattern that I think listeners need to know about this. So let me lay it out just front and center.
Let's do it.
And you can even volley back your thoughts. So faculty on university campuses are reporting that needy, less resilient students have shaped the landscape on the college campus. They're not dumb. They're smart.
Yes.
They're not bad people. They're good people. They're going to major in business or nursing or whatever, but they are less resilient. They're less gritty.
Yeah.
That's a word that's often used by professors, less gritty than past generations. So Dan Jones, former president of the Association for University and College Counseling Center Directors, is concerned about the mental and emotional health of these students. And listen to a soundbite he gave that I quoted recently in an article I did. He said, students haven't developed skills in how to soothe themselves because parents have solved all their problems and remove the obstacles.
Wow.
So that's naturally what we parents do. We love our children. If I love them, I'm going to remove the obstacles. That's what you do for people you love. Mm. But we're thinking more protection than preparation at that moment. He went on to say they don't seem to have as much grit as previous generations.
Wow.
Now, when I step back and look at big picture, I believe every generation is loaded with talent. I don't think there's one generation. Oh, you got a lot. You didn't get a lot. You know, millennials are bad and Gen Z's good. I think every generation has their amount of talent and potential that they've got. But somehow the conditions or the environment they are raised in either make them unable to realize that potential, or they just walk away and they don't want to. We've lack incentive, or we lack the grit that I just mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
So this generation of parents is very, very different in what the way we've gotten our kids ready for adulthood.
Yeah. And it's a young generation that, when I think about it, the we're not saying that they're never going to be ready for a leadership position.
Yeah.
Instead, what we're saying is as they transition into adulthood, they're missing something because of what's been done that keeps them from moving from successful adolescence into successful entry to college. There's basically, we're seeing what's happening is that there's a dip.
Yes.
Then they have to recover from that.
That's right.
And that's one of the things that I think is concerning to us.
It is. So my story is quite the contrast, and it was because of what some adults did for me when I was in high school. Mm. One in particular, Sean, that I talk about much in this office because he's kind of a hero of mine. But when I was in high school, I was doing fairly well academically. I was a good student, not, you know, summa cum laude graduate. But anyway, Sean kind of took me under his wing. He was a former football player at that high school and now was graduated college. He was in his mid-20s. But he took me under his wing, and he began to teach me leadership. Mm. And not just leadership, life in general. But he wanted to start an outreach in San Diego, California, where we both lived. And it was going to be something that was going to be very, very helpful to young people in the area. And he said, would you like to help me?
Mm.
Well, I said, absolutely, assuming that Sean was going to do the work and I was going to be the helper of the work.
Yeah,
well, little did I know, he was envisioning, no, I'm going to give you responsibilities along the way that will build grit, resilience, problem-solving skills, all these things that we need. So one of the events that we did on a weekly basis was a Friday night gathering in a music auditorium there in San Diego, just east of San Diego. And we'd show a great movie that would be a draw to students, and because that was back in the day before Blockbuster Video. I just want you to know. You couldn't just watch it yourself. That's right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then Sean would get up and speak, and he was a dynamic communicator, motivational. And so students would gather, they'd love the movie, and Sean would just, you know, charge them up on, here's what we can do to apply this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Long story short, I was his helper, which meant I set up the chairs, held his coat, and got him water. That was my job. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm a junior in high school. I'm up to this.
Yeah.
So a number of weeks into this Friday night event, Sean met me backstage and in a raspy voice told me he wasn't going to be able to speak tonight. And I thought, what are you talking about? He said, listen to me. And he continued on in this raspy voice saying, I don't think I'm going to be able to do this. But yet I know the kids are going to show up in about 30 minutes, and what are we going to do? So Sean suggested in that laryngitis voice, Tim, I think you should speak tonight. And I thought, Sean, I hold your coat. I don't speak, that sort of thing.
That's a totally different job.
That's right. Yes, very different skill set. But he coaxed me into doing it. He gave me his notes. He kind of encouraged me in a whispering voice. But that night, we traded places for the very first time.
Mm.
He got things ready out front, and I was backstage getting ready to go on after the movie and speak. Well, I spoke that night, and I was scared to death. I bet everybody listening can remember the first time you got up and spoke publicly. It was your worst nightmare, okay? But I made it. Sean came up and gave me a big bear hug afterwards and said, Tim, that was great. From now on, we're going to rotate. I'll be on one week, you'll be on the next. And from that time on, I was 17 years old. I have been speaking now for, I'm 15, let's see, 42 years. It's crazy how much that's happened. But the part of the story that I love the most was not just that Sean got me going, doing something I was afraid of doing, building a little grit and resilience. But some years ago, decades later, he and I met for dinner in Oceanside, California.
Yeah.
And we just started reminiscing about that outreach.
Telling old stories.
Yeah,
and
that's right. And we started focusing on that first night that I went on. And I could tell Sean was getting uncomfortable. And I said, what's wrong, buddy? He's looking down at the floor, not at me. And I could just tell he's uncomfortable. And he said, Tim, I guess I have a confession to make. I said, what? And he said, Tim, I really didn't have laryngitis that evening. I said, what are you talking about? He said, Tim, I was trying
to... It was a fake voice.
The only way I could get you up front is if I couldn't do it and you had to do it because nobody else was around besides me and you. So he said, that's what made me, you know, give you the notes, and I figured I would have to lie to you. Well, of course, I wanted to hit him, you know, at the dinner that night. But since that time, I've thought many, many, many times how cool it was that Sean's goal that night was not get the best speaker up on the stage.
Yeah.
Because he was the best speaker.
Yeah.
It was, I got a young leader that I can develop.
Yeah.
And I'm going to find a way, even if it's through deception, to get him up there. And so I guess, listeners, what I would say, whether you're an educator, parent, coach, whatever you do, if you got the next generation around you, we need to put up with messes and fails and get them trying out what they want to do and long to do but are afraid to get started. And we've got to be the ones that push rather than pull. Mm. We've got to be the ones that make them do it sometimes because we've been so fearful that they might make a mistake or fail or whatever that we don't ever let them try.
So many of us leading are not doing what Sean did, right? We're looking at it and saying, the best way for it to get done is for me to just do it myself.
Yeah.
Or the best way for them to succeed is for me to clear the path for them, right? Mm-hmm. Rather than let them do it. And that's having this negative effect that we're talking about. So
that's the difference between, I think, my parents' generation, who grew up in the 1930s, and my generation of parents, I'll confess, were the bad guys. So when my parents were growing up, they grew up learning grit and resilience because they grew up during the Great Depression and World War II.
Yeah.
I'm the post-World War II generation, so we wanted better for our children. In fact, the report card for a good parent is don't let them fail.
Yep.
Don't let them fall down or slip or not get everything they want and that sort of thing. So we actually remove the obstacles that might have been the very things that would prepare them for adult life. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
And it was well-intentioned, but it was a fail on our part that I think leads to the comments that we just read from Dan Jones, that students don't have the grit they used to have in school. It's interesting.
That's so important.
Yeah.
And not only is this affecting colleges and universities, but we're also seeing it affect workplaces as students are hired and brought on from recently graduated into their first job.
Yeah. So there's a San Francisco nonprofit organization called Youth Truth. They conducted a multi-year survey on college and career readiness, and they surveyed 165,000 students.
Wow.
So that's a big sample.
That's a big sample.
The results of their work were rather surprising. Only 45% of students felt they were actually ready for their career when they got done with school.
Wow.
Now, this is the time of life when you are probably over cocky, over arrogant, like, I'm ready to be VP by 25.
Yeah.
But it was less than half thought, I don't even know if I'm ready. So this tells me they're realizing I haven't gotten the tools I need to lead. And I don't think it's academic problems. Mm-hmm. Our academics are good. It's not, I can't take a pop quiz or I can't take a final exam. I think it's all the soft skills that we have failed to develop in these kids that make them ready for
it's
life.
It's the fact that there aren't pop quizzes and final exams once you get out of colleges and universities. And so the students are like, all the things I've been practicing and training and improving on are hard skills.
Yes,
right?
That's correct.
I don't struggle. I don't head into work missing hard skills. It's the soft skills I haven't had practice on.
So in our work with employers, we have found three lacking skill sets. Some are soft, all are soft, but some would be more tangible than others.
Okay.
But here are the three, and then I'd like to just spend the next 15 minutes maybe talking about what these are.
Good.
So the first one is resilience. I mentioned that earlier. We're just not bouncing back well. Number two is problem-solving skills.
Yeah,
so I learn to condition my brain to problem-solve instead of complain. And then number three, interpersonal skills, you know, the ways that I relate to others on a job.
Yeah,
social. And emotional learning.
Yeah, there you go.
So these are three apparent mistakes I think we made in these categories. And what I'd like to do is just talk through.
Let's address them.
Okay. So let's go back to resilience. The first one I listed just a minute ago is resilience. And my problem with this is if we as parents never let them fail, they won't develop resilience. I just don't think they will. I mean, if it's all good experiences, it was easy, I hit a home run, I made straight A's, if all that's all that happens, and I realize there's a minutia amount of students that actually that is their life, they don't, but I think a lot of times that happens way too often, and it wasn't their life. We created that life.
Yes.
Grade inflation is a good example. The average grade in 1969 was a C, because C means average.
Yeah.
The average grade today is an A. I'm not kidding. It's crazy. So we're all excellent.
Yeah.
Well, you can't all be excelling because
we're not all the best.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Exactly. So we adults have done this. So I did a book a few years ago called 12 Huge Mistakes Parents Can Avoid. And I talk about this idea of we just don't want to let kids fail. Why is that? It's a reflection on us. We will get blasted by other parents in PTA meetings or neighborhood conversations on social media. So because kids are such a reflection of us, we cannot let them fail.
Yeah.
And yet if we all stopped and thought about it, we'd say, failure was my best teacher. Resilience is only a theory if I never fail. I really learn it best when I have to get back up after a fail and learn it. So,
you know, what I was just thinking is there's a number of things in life that you can learn reading a book or watching a movie or, in this case, a YouTube video. In the case of The Next Generation, resilience is not one of those things, you know, because I think about every action movie a kid watches growing up is resilience, right?
That's so true.
The person is going, they fail miserably, and they decide, I'm going to pick myself up and go back and win the day, and they end up, you know, that's kind of the typical structure.
Yeah.
A student can watch that. And yet in their own lives, when they encounter failure, they never pick themselves back up and go for it. It's you can't watch a movie and learn resilience. The only way, even though I've seen the same story play out 1,000 times, the only way to actually have it for myself is to go through that process.
Yeah, it's so true. So here's how we did in our house. We didn't succeed every time. But my son and daughter were part of a community theater group growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were in plays. And we started a group called Hype. High school youth pursuing excellence. And Bethany said, Dad, we should do these habitudes in the Hype group. That would be perfect because they'd just come out.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, that'd be fun. That'd be fun. So she said, Dad, you should lead it. And here's who we should invite. You know, she went through the list. So I said, well, you invite them. So she invited all the kids. We had a living room full of 18, 20 students. And Bethany, I think, was really excited that we're going to do her dad's book. I started to realize Bethany shouldn't just invite these students. She should be leading this group.
Yeah.
In fact, the author should not be leading, you know, that sort of thing. So I remember the night I said, Bethany, you should actually lead this. You've gone through this book. Remember, we talked at dinner time about this. That's true. Well, it was so good to nudge her and to watch her absolutely do well. In fact, there were times it was messy. She wasn't a polished public speaker, facilitator, you know, that sort of thing. But she stayed with it. She had to bounce back a few times. It wasn't ready for prime time, but you know, she did it. And it was so fun for me to see less than perfect. A little bit messy was far better than I'll lead it. And
absolutely.
It'll go great every night.
And she can assess herself.
Yes.
Where could I get better and all those kinds of things.
That's exactly
right. That feeling of I tried and I succeeded. Yeah. Or even I tried, failed, and then I was succeeded.
Even better.
So important.
Yeah, that's right. So the second skill or quality we want to develop is problem solving. I mentioned that earlier. So here's the deal. If I do things for them, they won't build problem solving skills. So I talk to educators all the time that will say, Mom and Dad are doing things for their kids all the time. Mm. I have walked into many a Starbucks and found a parent doing the homework for their middle school kids.
Yes.
Because they're so stressed out. I got to do it for them. Well, I'm going, I don't like that stress.
Yeah.
But stress doesn't have to become distress. They probably need to start learning to build their resilience muscles and their problem-solving skills by saying, how do I do all of this?
Yeah.
Well, maybe I shouldn't sign up for 3 sports and try to make, you know, their honor roll.
Sounds like a problem.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was actually recently at an event where I met a young lady, or a woman rather, who's over housing at a university.
Yeah.
And she said she just the week before had gotten a call from a mom, and the mom started off the call by saying, we have a problem.
Interesting.
And she was referring to her young son,
yes,
who's a college student and living in a dorm room. The air conditioning had gone out. But instead of the young man contacting housing, he contacted his mom, and his mom contacted housing. And the way that she articulated it was not, my son has a problem.
Yeah.
It was, we have a problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
In other words, I'm not letting
I'm
my
this.
Son.
Yeah, that's right. Even though he's an adult.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you know, we talk about FOMO here, not just FOMO, fear of messing up, is FOMO, fear of missing out. And I believe part of the dilemma is that we still so own this identity of our children that we think it's a bad thing to not build problem-solving skills in them. And I actually think the only way they're going to do it is to start to do it. one thing that we did in our home from time to time, I would have my younger children, they were not seniors in high school, but younger children, Jonathan and Bethany, I'd have them watch the news, which was not their choice, but I would have them pick a problem on that 30-minute news broadcast. Wasn't hard to find a problem. And to say, okay, if we were in charge of this, what would we do?
Yeah.
And it turned out to be a very good exercise. Now, we needed to get past just mental gymnastics, but it started with mental gymnastics. And once they did that, it was amazing how they learned to think problem solving.
Yeah.
And then instead of complaining.
Yes.
But Andrew, you know, the school that I love the most is in Little Rock, Arkansas. It's a boys' school, a Catholic school for boys. But in their lobby, they have that big sign, or at least they did. I don't know if they do this year. But they had that big sign that we took a picture of. But the sign simply read, "Dear parents, if you're coming in to return your son's gym shorts, school assignment, or
lunch money,
please turn around and exit the building. Your son will learn to problem solve in your absence."
Love it.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what we're saying. It's okay. And the school is basically saying, we're okay with problem solving with them.
Yeah.
We'll receive that kid who's sweating bullets, but at least he's going to realize, or she, I can live through this and I can solve this problem.
Yep. The next time you're sitting there and you're seeing a problem that your student is facing, your child is facing, ask yourself, can they solve it on their own?
Yeah.
And if they can, let them go.
That's right. Absolutely. The third of these three is soft skills.
Yes.
So this is what some will call employability skills. These are the interpersonal skills, what educators would call social and emotional learning, which you and I both have studied and discovered. It has everything to do with performance academically.
Yes.
But it's people skills.
Yes.
I'm able to resolve conflict. I'm able to get through a stressful day because of my emotions.
Yeah, we're not one-dimensional human beings. Yes. Even in a classroom, we have to have social skills in order to succeed.
Yeah. So employers are saying, you got to build this into the kids. And if they're going to be leaders, this is a must. In fact, I've talked to employers that would say, I don't necessarily put a leader in charge that's the smartest person. I put the person in charge who's the best with people.
Mm.
So the leader doesn't have to be the smartest person in the room. I take heart in that.
Yes.
I want to be the person that's able to leverage the great talent that's in front of me through good belief and people skills and conflict resolution and listening, and now we go together. But I've been able to broker all that great human potential because I'm so good with people.
Yeah.
That's what we want for our students, and that's what's going to push them toward leadership. If you want your kids to be leaders, this is, I would say, all three are going to be important, but this would be at the top of the list, I think.
And for a lot of people, the enemy of these social skills is actually our technology.
Yeah,
it can be. The prevalence of our technology.
Yeah.
So that a lot of times this is a give and take, meaning if we want to build these things, we've got to walk away or get them to walk away from that technology.
Yeah. So we know they're going to have time in front of screens if we let them. So we're going to need to be intentional in leading our children. The intentionality means we have a time where phones are off or tablets are off or TV screens are off. And we're actually interacting over games at the kitchen table or doing something where we're out with people. We would take our kids down to Safe House Outreach in Atlanta and feed the homeless on a fairly regular basis. We would do other community projects, but we weren't even, I don't think we were brilliant. We just said this is the best way to learn social and emotional skills, to be face-to-face with people who are not like you, who sometimes don't smell so good. You know, all these things that I'm repulsed by, I'm actually going to get good with this. Because I'm good with this, I'll be really good with a neighbor that actually smells good. You know, that sort of thing. So that was important for us.
So good. So good. Well, we've talked about three challenges that parents face or three mistakes we want them to avoid. We talked about resilience, as in if I never let them fail, they're not going to develop resilience.
Yeah.
You talked about problem solving, as in if I always do things for them, they're not going to build problem solving skills. And you talked about soft skills or interpersonal skills.
Yep.
If I don't balance their screen time, they're never going to get to cultivate those soft skills. I think if we really want, parents, if you're out there, if you really want to succeed, we've got to stop making some of these mistakes.
Yeah, you're right. And doing some of these things for them.
Yes.
So I'll close with a story, Andrew. This came to my mind. I met a couple not long ago who spoke to me about their teenage daughter. And they live in an upper middle class area like many Americans do, but they had confided in me that she was feeling pretty entitled to a car when she was 16, a smartphone, lots of spending money, and all the perks that her friends received, who were also upper middle class.
Yeah.
Really, it's the price of privilege. Mm-hmm. The it's so nice to have all these things, but boy, does it make us less resourceful when we have resources.
Yes.
So they started saying, I don't know what we're going to do. She's so entitled, and she's not a leader like we thought she would be, like she was when she was a little girl.
Yeah.
Now she's kind of a spoiled brat. So I said, well, what does she do that makes you not lead her well? What is it? And she goes, well, she actually threatens to run away from home. And she's 15 and a half, so she's almost ready to get her driver's license. And they said, what do you think we should do? And I probably blew them away. And I don't even know if this is good behavioral science. But here's what I said. I said, I think you should lovingly and gently call her bluff. And I think you should say, well, maybe that's the thing you should do then, if you think you should.
Yeah.
Because you're a teenager.
Think you do better on your own. Go for it.
And centuries gone by, 15 and a half, you're grown up. You got stuff to do, you know? So she threatened it. And sure enough, they very gently said, well, we don't want you to go, sweetheart. But maybe if you think you should go, maybe you should go. And from that point on, they start encouraging it. I'll be glad to help you pack. Maybe, you know, no, you should pack on your own. You want to leave. So they really toss it over to her. All the things they'd been doing, they stopped doing. Well, she moved away for one day. She got a dose of reality after 24 hours and came back with her tail between her legs. And again, it wasn't humiliation. It was humbling.
Yes.
Because she started realizing, wow, this is different than I thought. Mm-hmm. And I probably need to listen to mom and dad. And I probably need to exercise some of these skill sets that mom and dad are always talking about, but I've never gotten.
Yeah. Replacing entitlement for gratitude.
Right? Yeah. So, and the good news is this teen would learn these skills either way, either the hard way or the soft way. And this was just a great way for loving parents to coach the growth of leadership potential in their daughter.
Absolutely.
By saying, why don't you do it?
And that's what we know, the parents listening to this, you guys are loving parents, right? They're, even a lot of these parents that are making some of these mistakes are loving parents.
Yeah.
That's really not the point that's in contention. Yeah. The point is, how do you lead them well, help them reach their full potential? Mm-hmm. And the reality is we don't do it by doing things for them.
It's true. So can I tell you one more story? I know we need to end this thing, but I'll make this quick. So I'll never forget the story of a mother that also had a bit of a spoiled brat. He was a younger boy, probably 7 years old, but he would get his own way when they were out in public by threatening to take his clothes off. And of course, his mother would just get so embarrassed and so humiliated. OMG. She would always give in because she thought, good God, I don't want him to take his clothes off in the grocery store or the gas station or whatever. Well, it was time to go to the dentist for this little boy. And so mama took him in and he goes, Mom, I don't want to go to the dentist. I'm going to take my clothes off if you make me go in there. And so she said to the dentist, he keeps threatening to take his clothes off, so I may not be able to complete this visit, but let's just see if he'll make it through the visit. The dentist said to the little boy, excuse me just a minute, I'm going to talk to your mother. They went into another room and the dentist said, you trust me? Well, she said, of course, we've been going to you for years and years. I want to lead this situation, and I want you to be out in the waiting room. You don't need to be in the room with us if you'll trust me. Okay, she said. So she goes out in the waiting room. Well, the little boy starts getting his teeth cleaned and, you know, cavities or whatever. And the little boy goes, all right, I'm going to take, if you don't stop, I'm going to take my clothes off. And the dentist just stepped back and said, okay, I'll wait. No, I'm really going to do it. I'll wait. We got a few minutes. It won't take you long, will it? I'm really going to do it. So he starts unbuttoning his shirt. Okay, I'm going to do the rest now. Okay, that's all right. Good. Takes his pants off. So little kid's down to just his underwear. He's got socks and underwear on. 7 years old, so he's not 19. He's 7 years old. But the dentist goes, you know, son, I think now we probably ought to do this appointment later. So let's gather up your clothes. We'll walk you out in the waiting room, and I'll tell your mom we are going to do it at another time, just like you requested at the beginning. So the little boy has to walk out in the waiting room in his undies. He's a little embarrassed now. But guess it, nobody else. Dentist not embarrassed. The dentist has led this little kid well. The mother told the dentist a year later, he's never done it again.
Wow.
The bluff had to be called, and we had to lead him.
Yeah.
Well, of course they did. He's not emotionally immature. He's seven.
Yeah.
So parents, just listen to me. We've got to lead our kids. Love them and lead them. And that was tough love, but it was love.
That's good. Well, as you're listening to this, maybe you want more. And one of the resources that comes immediately to mind is the book you wrote, 12 Huge Mistakes That Parents Can Avoid, which I know has helped thousands of parents around the U.S. and around the globe. But another one that we're really excited about as we think about how do we lead the next generation well is a resource that actually just went into pre-order. Mm-hmm. It's a new book you and I have been working on for a long time called Generation Z Unfiltered.
Yep.
And we're really excited about the release of this book and also how practical we've tried to make it. And I don't know if you want to say a few things about it.
Sure, yeah. We try to be pracademic. So the books will always be research-based, academically sound, but yet very practical. So we covered 9 challenges in this book that we believe Generation Z faces more than any other generation in the past. Mm. Some of it's brought on by smart technology. But we address these 9 challenges with 9 solutions, 9 research-based solutions. So, you know, you and I have had so much fun with this book. It's been tough.
Yeah.
Tough for me.
Yeah.
But we feel like we've got a product that's going to be such a tool in the hands of parents, teachers, coaches, employers, youth workers, anybody that's got kids in front of them. We're going to help these kids become great adults because we led them well when they were kids.
Awesome. Well, like we said, this book is called Generation Z Unfiltered. We're trying to provide some clarity on who are they and how do we help them become the best version of themselves. The pre-order right now that's available, you actually, when you order, you get the book, you get the ebook, you get the audiobook, you'll get the Marching Off the Map ebook right now, which is awesome. But you're also going to get 2 additional resources, which one is our digital discussion guide, so you can start discussions with other parents, maybe create a parent circle where you talk through this.
Yeah.
What do we do about about this generation? And then we're also providing, which is a really cool, this is a new tool, table topics.
Yep,
where we take the content of the book and actually put them onto cards so you can get it out right there at the dinner table with your kids, and you can pull out different cards and start organic conversations around these 9 challenges so that you can begin to help students, the kids you're leading, actually think about some of these things. So we're really excited about all that. You get all 6 of those items when you pre-order this book right now for $24.99, which is obviously a really great price you won't be able to get once the book is released. So that's coming out in the fall, but you can pre-order it right now at GenerationZUnfiltered.com. So head on over there, pre-order. We're really excited about the release of that resource. Thank you so much for listening in. Thank you, Tim, for your wisdom on this. As always, if you could rate the podcast, that really helps us out. Hop on iTunes and give us 5 stars. If you want to connect with us on online, social media, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, we're at Growing Leaders and at Tim Elmore. We love connecting with you there. And then as always, if you've got ideas for this podcast, maybe you have somebody you want us to interview, a topic you want us to cover, shoot us an email, podcast@growingleaders.com. We love getting this from you. So thanks for listening in. Please go lead those kids really, really well, and we'll see you next time.